Hello, hello, hello. Good morning. This is Glenn Coble, and you're listening to On the Air. And I was trying to figure out what I was doing wrong. Well, what I was doing wrong is I was pushing the wrong thing up, but now I got the right thing up. So you can hear me. And we just had a great interview. Scott had a great interview with Mary Ellen Withrow. What a wonderful lady, and what a gift to Marion she is. And I've got a gift today. We've got a guest that we have every final Thursday of the month. I've finally gotten that right, and now I have to figure out which microphone you're on. Okay.
Testing.
There you go. James Anderson, the naturalist here from Marion, Ohio. What a bright guy he is.
I
tried. For such a young guy. And today he brought us guests.
I did, several guests.
Well, talk to us about your guests. He's got this little aquarium in front of us. And it's not a place I would go swimming. It's full of weeds. I hate weeds when I'm swimming. But there's a reason for that.
Yes, so what I brought in today is a miniature fernal pool. And if you're not familiar, fernal pools
are... We talked about that last time.
We did. We did with the salamanders, yeah. They are temporarily wetlands, so they are designed to be full in the spring and dry in the summer. And I know we are kind of getting in the late season of the fernal pools, and that's why I still want to talk about them, because this is the time when they're really vulnerable, those habitats are, because as that water's drying up, they just become either little puddles or just muddy spots.
What do the little critters do when they dry up?
So it just depends on the animal. So those, like the salamanders and the frogs, they hopefully are changing into their adult forms by the time the water is dried up. But some wildlife, like fairy shrimp and some other macroinvertebrates, will lay their eggs into the mud, and then they'll stay there for the winter time, and they'll metamorphosize in the next spring.
It's easy for you to say. Okay.
So it's just really cool that fernal pools that, you know, they show wildlife all year long. Obviously, they're going to have more wildlife in the spring. But even during the summertime, there are some sort of wildlife that are taking advantage of them. During the late summer, early fall, there's a salamander called the marble salamander, and she lays her eggs underneath the leaves because since it's so wet, that's a really good place for the eggs to stay on, and then they'll stay in that stage until the early spring, and they'll hatch out while everybody else is laying eggs. They're already hatched into their tadpole form, so they get ahead of the game.
I imagine these pools are a major source of food for critters, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's macroinvertebrates. There's a lot of little insects. Of course, you know, tadpoles, which are
Tell
food.
Us what a macroinvertebrate is.
So macroinvertebrate, so break it down, is macro means big, so you're able to see with your eye. An invertebrate, creature without a backbone.
Oh, okay.
So a creature we can see with our eye without a backbone.
Is a worm an invertebrate?
Yes. Okay. Yep. So worms, insects, crustacea.
Gotcha.
Those would be an example.
Now, crustacea, they have their bones on the outside.
Yes, right? the ectoskeleton, just like insects.
Yeah, okay, cool. I'm just trying to keep everybody in line here and make sure we all know what we're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
But
oh,
that pool is naturally beautiful and ugly all at the same time. And you said there's a leech in there.
There can be leeches, yeah. And the big thing what we don't want to see is we don't want to see fish. Because the problem with fish is they eat everything.
Well, and then they're going to die.
Yeah, they would eventually die if they stayed in that pool for the summer.
How would they get in there? Be dropped by a bird? Or
it could be a bird. Also, too, if there's a close stream nearby or a river, and if it were to flood over, they could hop on over. And, of course, if you caught one and say, oh, hey, I'm going to put this fish in this vernal pool. So those are some ways.
Wonderful. Kids do that.
I'm
going to save it.
That's right. Again, that's what we don't want to see.
Okay.
And, you know, I know last month we were talking about, like, salamanders and frogs and all.
Yeah.
So a lot of our frog activity is down because they're trying to hurry up because the green frogs and the bullfrogs, they're starting to emerge out of hibernation and all, because those guys are cannibals and they will eat anything that can fit in their mouths. They eat all kinds of stuff.
So they eat meat.
Oh yeah, they are meat eaters. Okay. So the little tadpoles I brought with you. So they start as a vegetarian or herbivore diet, and then once they turn into adults, they have a carnivorous diet.
Now you know I've told you many times I'm not a big touchy feely kind of person with critters.
Yeah,
but
tadpoles when I was young. I used to catch them all the time.
And, oh, did you?
Because they were really friendly.
And, oh, yeah. And, yeah, they don't have teeth.
They have no teeth. And they like to, they kind of, when they're in your hand, they kind of wiggle around.
Oh, know? Yeah. So most of the frogs that lay their eggs in the fernal pools, they'll stay in there for about 90 days, and then they'll metamorphosize into adults.
Now, how did you get that? Did you just scoop that out with a...
Yeah, I had a little net. I got to put some water in it, and then I got a net and scooped it up and then put it in here.
Okay, yeah.
So, yeah, these little guys that you're probably seeing,
yeah,
they're either, I can't really tell right now, but they're either a wood frog or a spring peeper. One of the two. And there actually are some of these tadpoles that do have little limbs starting to grow out.
Oh, okay. Well, they're all tadpoles right now, right?
Yes, yeah. They're in their tadpole stage.
Yeah, and then they become frogs.
Yes.
Is it frogs or toads? What's
the difference? Well, I mean, it just depends. But, yeah, frogs and toads are the same, but they are different. So frogs are primarily... semi-aquatic, so that means they really are close to water source. Uh-huh. Versus toads, you know, they can be away from some type of, like, pond or creek or anything. That's why you see them around your gardens. Mm-hmm. That's why you see them out in foresty areas, because they can just absorb the moisture through their skin. Then, of course, toads, you know, you see the little bumps, or you might have called them warts. No, you cannot get warts from toads. That's the old wise tale. But frogs,
if you kiss one, you will turn into a prince.
You could. But frogs are completely slimy, or very smooth, and the toads have more of a dry appearance.
Now, is that slime really something they secrete, or is it just because they're in the water a lot?
It's mainly from secretion, but mm-hmm. probably a little bit from getting wet. But like we talked with the salamander last month, it really keeps them hydrated.
That was Sammy.
Yeah, Sammy, yes, that's right. So for frogs, once they change into the adult form, you know, they really don't breathe through their skin versus some of the salamander species we talked about
right.
In April. You know, they really depend on that secretion because that's really how they absorb oxygen.
Are they good pitchers?
They're good. I see.
You remember that old movie where the guy, he would breathe through his eyes.
I forget.
I'll think of it.
Yeah. But, you know, you've ever seen a toad hop, you know, the little hops?
Yeah.
You know, frogs do the giant leaps.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Toads do little hops.
Yeah, they do.
And frogs do giant leaps.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you ever seen a frog, you know, how they crunch their legs, you know, in that weird angle. So think of it like a rubber band, you know, how when you expand it, you kind of feel that tension.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what they're doing when they're kind of twisting their legs, or, you know, they're tightening their muscles. And then they, once that predator or threat comes by, then they release it. And then that's how they're able to jump.
But they
so
sit
far.
Like that all the time, though.
Yeah, well, they have to be ready.
Yeah, they might be eating at any moment.
But the thing is they get tired very quickly.
Oh.
So that's why they stay very close to a pond or a creek or any type of water source, because their goal is to hop in the water and then swim away.
Yeah.
But if they were more away from some type of water source, they could leap a few times and then they're so tired.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't know animals got tired.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why I would think that, but...
Yeah, we're one of the few creatures that have a long endurance. Humans do.
We do.
Yeah. So we may not be fast like a lot of animals, but we have a long endurance.
Especially after you... I'm told, especially after you turn 30.
Oh, yeah?
After you turn 30, your endurance goes up.
Really?
Yeah, I had a team physician tell me that.
I didn't know that.
Now, my team physician is also, he also told me some other wives' tales, but that one I believe, and I think I've heard that on television shows and stuff like that, the best distance runners tend to be over 30.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's like cheetahs.
So there's still hope for you, none for me.
Well, that's like cheetahs, you know. Yes, they can run up to 65 miles per hour, but they can only do it for a very short time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, they get very winded, very tired very quickly.
Yeah, but you have to be winded while you're eating your prey.
Yes,
took down. Yeah, okay. All right. Well, cool. Now, the leeches that are in there, do they turn into anything? Or do
no.
they just stay leeches?
They just stay leeches.
Yuck.
So they start as an egg, and then they look like a little worm, and then they turn into what you see.
Look like a little bigger worm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, my grandfather was a doctor, and one of the things that we got when he passed away was his kit that he had
okay.
to store his leeches.
Oh, because really?
Because they would bleed people back yeah, in those yeah. days.
They have that anticoagulant.
Yikes. Yeah. Oh, they do have an anticoagulant. Yeah. Also, there was scientific reason to do that,
yes,
just to relieve you of blood.
Yeah. Snakes have an anticoagulant, too.
Is
so
that right?
That's why if you ever get bit by a snake, you'll bleed, you know, for a little while.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm not going to get bitten by a snake because I'm not going to be anywhere near one. Well, I take that back. Since I walk on the tall grass trail, I know that there are snakes out
there. There are, yep. Yeah.
Have you noticed a lot of them popping out lately?
Yes, and now with it being warmer, I don't see them as often because they're getting the nice warmth from the sun
yeah.
in all directions. Now, versus the spring and fall, when they're coming in and out of hibernation, you'll see a lot more on the trail.
Well, now, the little ones, you saw a lot of those early, and I can't
yes.
remember the name of them.
They're called brown snakes.
Well, we have a caller. Let's go to the phone and see what they have to say. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Well, good morning, Glenn, and good morning to James.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Nice to hear both of you this morning.
Hi, Fred. This is Fred.
Oh, Fred.
Say, James, I wanted to tell you, the other day I was looking out my front door checking my bird feeder,
okay.
my hummingbird feeder, and this is kind of an amazing sight. I've got a little woodpecker.
Oh, yeah?
The one with the little red spot on its head. I can't remember what those are called. Black with a little red spot.
It could be either a downy or a hairy woodpecker.
A downy.
Those are males.
He actually flew up to my hummingbird feeder.
Okay.
Clamped with his little claws onto the little ring around the bottom of it.
Yeah.
And proceeded to stick his beak in those little holes.
Yeah. Can they get in there?
I've never seen them do that.
Yeah, they were really looking for ants. I know a lot of times, but sometimes I have seen them get nectar. Now, the little ones, like the downy and hairy, they're more successful than the larger woodpeckers, not so much.
Okay. Yeah, this was a real small one, so I'm sure it was a downy, because I went and got my bird book right afterwards and looked it up. So I was pretty sure that's what it was, but it's so funny, I have not seen any hummingbirds yet around the cedar.
I haven't either.
Oh, you haven't?
The juice keeps going down.
Well, then somebody's doing something to it.
I think it's this woodpecker.
It could be. Also, too, Baltimore Orioles, they'll take advantage of hummingbird feeders.
Well, that was the next thing I wanted to say. The next day, I saw a beautiful Baltimore Oriole fly out of my crab apple tree.
Oh, yeah.
And that sits right beside the hummingbird feeder, so I wonder if maybe he wasn't helping himself.
Oh, yeah, I can see him doing that.
I've got a word for those guys.
Well, that's the first Baltimore Oriole I have seen in years around my property.
I haven't seen one since I was lived in Baltimore, outside of Baltimore.
Beautiful bird. I was really... in fact, I had to double-check my bird book to make sure that's what I saw, but that was what it was.
Yeah.
But anyway, I wanted to share that with you about the downy woodpecker, because I didn't realize that they did that.
Well, you make me feel better, because you haven't seen any hummingbirds yet either. So.
No, I haven't. But I've already filled the juice up. This is the second time I filled
me
it
too.
Up since I put it out, and that was around the 1st of May. So.
Well, I filled mine up because mine was starting to grow hair. So.
Oh, well,
I haven't had that
problem. And I'll tell you, if you want to keep the ants away, I have mine on a shepherd's hook.
Oh, yeah.
Sprinkle a bunch of cinnamon around the base of the shepherd's hook, and the ants won't crawl up.
Really?
It.
That's interesting.
Huh,
yep. Good to know.
I didn't know that.
Yep, it keeps them away.
All right.
Well, I learned something new.
Hey, guys, have a great day. I'm getting ready to head off to the Lunch with the President.
The first
one we've had since the COVID started.
Good luck and have a great day.
Good luck.
Yeah. All right, take care, guys.
Bye-bye, Fred.
Bye.
All right, Fred Malone. He's my man that calls, he's calling in now because of the COVID, but he used to come in. And he's on the other Thursday toward the end of the month. He's on the third Thursday. And I get you too confused sometimes because he might come on the third Thursday. I think you're going to be on the next week, but there's a fifth Thursday.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we'll get past all this.
But something I do want to mention while Fred was talking about with the hummingbird feeders, since it is getting warmer, you do need to change it often. Anything really above 80 degrees, you need to change it at least every other day. And once we're about 85, 90 degrees, you need to change it every day.
Holy cow.
Or it will spoil, and it can actually kill the hummingbirds.
Well, that was what was going on with mine and why I changed it, because I could see, well, that's odd. It's growing stuff on the top.
Yeah.
Well, it was it was spoiled. So yes. I got rid of it and have fresh stuff out there right now.
That's good. Now, do you make your own or do you buy it?
Yeah, I just do the quarter cup of sugar in a, what is it, a pint? Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, I do one part sugar, four parts water.
Yeah,
so, that's probably about the same.
So and
no red dye. Don't use red dye.
I haven't used the red dye. I've got the feeder has red on it.
Yeah, and that works just as well.
Yeah, I assume that it attracts them.
So. Yeah, I have a one that's an entire red glass, and that works really well.
Oh yeah, sure, yeah. Is it they see that color or
no? They can see all colors.
Oh, they can.
Yeah, birds actually. Most birds have actually what's called four cone cells. We have three, so they can actually see a lot of ultraviolet rays.
Oh my!
So they see a color a little bit better than us on most species. But no, they can see red. They can see yellow and orange. Those are the top three colors that really attract hummingbirds. But I've seen them on blue flowers. I've seen them on white flowers. So.
What really attracts them is the nectar, right?
Yes.
They, I'm sure, can either smell it or taste it in the air or something. They have a tiny little but very long tongue.
They do. And you know what's really cool about woodpeckers and hummingbirds? Their tongues are so long, it cannot fit in their mouth, so they actually have to wrap it on top of their skull.
You're kidding.
Yeah. And like a snake, hummingbirds have a forked tongue.
They do.
Yeah, they do.
That would scare me.
So, no, they don't... They don't smell, they don't taste, they just look at the colors and they're looking at the flower or the feeder, and they know from instinct that, okay, that provides some type of nutrition for me.
So they don't taste?
No.
Oh.
Well, I bet they probably do taste some, but they most birds can't smell.
Huh.
Only gulls and vultures and condors.
So the little holes in their beak are just to intake air.
Basically,
okay, that's too bad. I feel sorry for the guys. There's some smells that are really good.
Yeah.
Now this morning, it was cooler, and all my garden was raising its hands to the heavens. My garden just exploded this morning.
Oh, what did it?
Will that draw more critters, or is it just a short thing that'll go away, I guess.
I would say it will definitely attract insects. And then, of course, you've got insects, you've got birds that are taking advantage.
Yeah.
So I would say it might increase little critter activity for a little bit.
We've put out, this year, because of COVID, I had nothing else to do, so I built a bird feeder, and, I've put out a lot more stuff than I've put out. And I have four bird feeders out now.
Okay.
And they were doing really, really well, and they slowed down now. Are they getting plenty of food out in the forest?
Yes.
Oh, because my wife thought maybe we had done something wrong.
No, and that happens. Usually in winter, early spring, and late fall, as natural foods are depleting, they're going to really hit your bird feeders. But during the late spring, summer, early fall, there's a lot of natural foods for them. And they'll take advantage of the natural foods.
So I can tell my wife not to feel so bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
but still provide it for them, because, there are still some birds that may have trouble finding natural foods.
Well, and the squirrels.
Oh, yeah, and the squirrels.
And we've decided it's okay if squirrels eat some of our birds.
Okay, well, that's good.
Yeah, because we have enough bird feeders up that they can't get to, that the one that's down that they can get to, they've gotten very polite, and they only eat the scraps, the stuff that falls off of that bird.
Oh, well, they're nice, because other squirrels, I hear, they'll eat everything.
Now, I've heard that if you put... what's the pepper? Cayenne pepper.
Yep.
In it. It won't bother the birds, but it will bother the squirrels.
Yes. Yep. And you can do Tabasco sauce, too.
Really?
Yeah. Now, you can buy the actual seed that has that spice on it. It's a little pricey, but you do it at home, by yourself, and save a lot more money.
Yeah. Now, we buy... our bird seed is the very finest economy bird seed.
Oh, okay.
That's what it's called, economy. And so I doubt that it has that on there, but what do you just sprinkle
it on.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now, does bird seed go bad if you have a rainy week?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it does. Okay.
It does, yeah.
So should you get rid of that bird seed?
Yes.
Okay. That's too bad. I think I left it out. But we haven't had really a rainy season yet.
We've no.
had a day.
It rained yesterday for a little bit.
But they seem to eat it after a rain.
They will. They will. And it will take a little time for that seed to mold.
It's mold that causes them to go bad. I thought maybe they start to germinate, but I would assume
some do. Stuff. Like I know thistles, like nitre thistles, suet, or not suet. I'm trying to think of this little balls. It looks like corn, but it's not corn. I'm drawing a blank right now.
Okay.
But anyhow, they germinate.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now we found we started getting turtle doves. We've never had turtle doves, but the only difference is that one day I decided, okay, I'll put some thistle seed.
Okay.
And they apparently like the thistle seed, though it's teeny weeny seed. They eat that a lot.
Sometimes I'll take advantage of that, but I know a lot of the finch species will really like those thistle seeds.
We do have several finches that come by. Yeah. Now, I've bought a book, and I have an app on my phone. As I've told you, I use it to call them. it's hard. It's really hard to see all the markings without having, even with binoculars, because they move so quickly.
Yes.
And especially with binoculars, because you put the binocular on and they're gone.
Yes, and some species are a lot faster than others.
Yeah, and some of those little sparrows take off in a hurry.
Oh, yeah.
I think they know when I'm watching.
Oh, yeah. And you think they're bad. Warblers are worse. Warblers never sit still. And that's a great characteristic when you're looking up, at them in the wild, and they never, stop moving. They're like, okay, at least I know you're in the warbler category or the warbler group.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I'll be done. So how do people that are birders, how do they get so they know what all these birds are? Just experience time after time after time?
Experience and just research. I mean, if you got a field guidebook at home.
I do.
And, of course, the internet these days, there's a lot of great programs that are out there.
But I never see them long enough to see all the, this one has three stripes on it. I never have time enough to count the stripes.
Yes, yeah. And then where you may need to look at other characteristics. Look at beak shapes. Look at their feet. Look at the tail. I mean, there's a lot of different features you can look at a bird other than just those three stripes around the eye or whatever.
Well, now, it is kind of interesting. There are certain birds, when they take off from my bird feeders, they look just kind of brown when they're at the bird feeder. They take off, and they have all sorts of beautiful stripes on their tails and their wings as they take off. I've gotten really into watching them.
That's good.
I occasionally, if my wife's listening, turn the phone or the radio off. I occasionally sit out there with a very tall beer and watch them. And as I've told you, I have that app that will call or will give calls. And I've gotten so I call the doves, I call the blue jays, and I call the cardinals. And as they get close, I turn it off so I'm not annoying them.
That's good. Yeah.
But they will come pretty close and listen to that.
Well, especially like cardinals, I mean.
Oh, they're very curious.
Because what you're doing is you're saying, I'm a male cardinal and
I'm
want this land.
Bothered.
Yes. And I want this land and I want your girl.
Oh.
And that's what you're basically telling that cardinal.
Oh, I am so sorry.
And so he's coming by and he said, no, you're not. He's going to look at you and make sure, hey, are you another cardinal in my territory or whatever? And they'll chase you out.
They do, and the blue jay actually flies down, swoops down at my head.
So do they?
I immediately turn it off when they start doing that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, owls. You really got to be careful with owls.
Oh, I won't use the owl.
I've never had this happen, but I've had friends who have been park naturalists at other parks, and they really, really wanted to get close during their night hikes. And unfortunately, this one little screech owl, he swooped down, and he start scratching him, and his poor shoulder was all scratched up. It looked like he wrestled a bobcat.
Oh my!
But yeah, it was just a little screech owl.
Well, I don't want to get that close. And on my walk, I think I walk most days. And on my walk, I go out into the area that's called the woods.
Yeah.
And at the end of my walk there last year, 2 years ago, there's a big tall tree, and it had a hawk in it. Yeah,
I met somebody that got attacked.
And he attacked me.
Oh, he attacked
he
you.
He came right at my head. Oh no, I think I remember you talking about somebody else also was attacked by.
Yeah, them. And it scratched his face up pretty.
Oh,
good.
I didn't. I got the heck out of there before the. Thing
yeah,
got,
but it was a female. She had a nest.
Yeah, yeah, I could tell that she was on a nest because she'd stand there and stare at me as I walked along.
Yeah,
and then I got. Relatively close, about as close as we were to that eagle. You remember where we walked under his tree?
Yeah.
And that was it. I'm done with you. And she came right at me. She flew right at my face.
Yeah, they're very territorial.
Yikes. I don't like that type of a nature.
She's just protecting her babies.
Yeah, I understand. And but I quit walking quite as far into the woods now. I don't go by her tree anymore, and that's been 2 years.
Okay.
She convinced me. Oh, me. Okay, well, let's see. Well, I'm sure, do eagles and hawks go after stuff like you have there in that pond?
Oh, yeah. Definitely our smaller hawk species, owls. They would really take advantage of critters that would be living in or around a fernal pool because, of course, you got snakes and you got frogs. And
how do leeches get in a fernal pool?
So leeches, those would probably most likely be brought over by another animal, or they might have just started there and just start populating. You typically don't find leeches in fernal pools.
Oh, okay.
Just this one I did. This one was around Paradise, so that's where it got flooded over. So I'm assuming it probably came from the Olentangy River.
Or maybe an animal went to the river, got a leech on it, and walked into that, and
that's
it
possible.
Came off. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, now, as far as I'm concerned, the owls and the hawks and the eagles can eat as many leeches as they want. They're not a handsome critter. The leeches aren't. Well, they just look like worms.
They do. They do. So the bird that probably you would probably see doing that is the like herons, like great blue herons or green herons. Yeah.
Now, if a leech attaches itself to a bird.
Yeah.
Do they have a way of do they just pluck it off? Or?
They can.
Yeah.
Or sometimes they just fall off.
Oh, okay. That's a long fall.
Yeah, it would be.
I did see, it was out at the Tall Grass Trail. I saw, it wasn't an eagle, but it was it probably was a hawk.
Okay.
It was fairly big and it had a mouse or some
little
critter, maybe a chipmunk, I don't know, in its claw, and it was not very far off the ground.
Oh,
it was like 20 feet off the ground.
Oh, geez.
And another bird attacked it and he dropped the critter. The critter ran away, so he hadn't killed it.
Oh, boy.
But that's a long fall.
Oh, that would be.
Yeah, I don't know if it hurt the little guy, but I didn't ask. I just kept going. All right, well, what are you doing out there at the Tall Grass Trail right now?
So right now, I don't know if you saw on our Facebook posts here in the last couple of days, we added extra gravel at the canoe launch.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, so we were really excited about that. We got some gravel, about 4 tons of gravel, and we did it right there at the entrance point where canoes come in and out of.
Okay.
Because the problem...
Right off of her road there.
Yeah, off of her road. The problem was it was so muddy, and so as the canoe and kayakers were walking in, you know, they were kind of sinking as they were trying to get into their canoes and kayaks.
Probably.
So, yeah, it was a little slippery. So, yeah, we added some extra gravel so it'll prevent from people sinking.
Are you getting a lot of canoers out
there? Oh, yes. Usually in the evening, I imagine this weekend we'll probably get a bunch of people.
Kayakers as well, I assume.
Yes.
Have you had any sailors out there?
No. Well, we got a wind sailor. Or surfer, I should say.
Yeah.
They use a sail, and they would use the wind currents, and they would go back and forth.
Yeah. So. Now, you could sail that lake because it's broad enough that you'd get, and it's flat enough around it.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to get too close to the...
to the western edge.
Yeah, edge.
It's shallow.
Yeah. Well, and also trees. Aren't they?
No.
The western edge with all the trees?
No, it's the eastern edge that has all the trees, but the western edge is really shallow. It's only about 4 feet.
So you got to stay in the middle.
Yeah.
Well, most sailboats that you would have out on that lake would only have a draft of maybe, I don't know, a foot, because you're not going to take a A sailboat with a long rudder or a long... Yeah. What am I thinking of? Anyway, you wouldn't have deep sailboats out there. Anyway, I would like to get a little sailboat and flop around out there.
You could do what's those new ones? Paddle boards. We've seen a couple paddle boards out there.
I was watching this morning. My wife had a show on. They were selling property in England, and one of the properties had a little lake on it. And oh, it was so much fun to go on one of the, what are they called? Paddle boards.
Yeah, paddle boards.
Yeah, they were telling us how much fun it was to go on the paddleboard on this little lake. It looked absolutely boring to tears. Really. And not only that, if I'm going to be in a boat, I want to sit down. I don't want to be standing up.
Yeah.
I'm not that agile anymore. So. As you know, it's my birthday today.
Oh, and yes.
75, I have found out that I am not as agile as I used to be.
Well, you don't look like a day over 30.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay, I got to go buy a present for him now. We got about 10 more minutes. Is there something else you'd like to get into before we move into the break?
Yeah, kind of back to the Fernal Pools.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. You're fine. I just, again, I want people to just realize that, again, there's a lot of great stuff, and even though it will look dry in the summer, you know, don't go out and dredge it, you know, if you have a Fernal Pool on your property or what. Because, again, that's just a time where it's very vulnerable because, again, people just don't realize that, you know, that's a whole new world, a whole new ecosystem habitat that's right there in their backyards.
Well, how about in their driveways where their big tires make ruts?
And that's a problem, especially, like, down in Wayne's National Forest and all, mm-hmm. when people are doing their dirt bikes and ATV four-wheelers, is when they are doing that near a Fernal Pool, you got, like, salamanders and frogs that will say, oh, hey, there's another Fernal Pool.
Yeah.
And then they'll go over there and they'll lay their eggs. Well, we know about ruts is they dry up really fast. Oh, yeah, really? Or they could get squished. But, yeah, they dry up very quickly. And then, so next thing you know, those eggs or tadpoles are killed.
So as a person that owns property, making your own Fernal Pools are probably not the best idea.
No, I mean, you can try. It's just, it's not the, you won't be as successful as a natural Fernal Pool. Now, I have heard of people or park districts that have tried to make it. And, I mean, of course, there are some wildlife that are there. But, you know, a natural Fernal Pool is definitely a lot better.
Oh, sure. Because, yeah, it's nature.
It's nature.
But it also attracts mosquitoes, does it not?
And that's one of the other problems. People don't like Fernal Pools because it's a wetland. And they'll say, oh, it attracts mosquitoes. Well, got to remember, with Fernal Pools, they'll dry up by the time the mosquitoes will roll around. And then with all these little amphibians in there,
they're eating
all those baby mosquitoes, or all the other macro vertebrates are eating the mosquitoes. So, but yeah, unfortunately, you know, you do have swamps and marshes which do stay wet year long. Yes, it can be a breeding ground for mosquitoes. Sorry, I couldn't think of the word. But you know, as long as, you know, we don't pollute these wetlands, you know, these amphibians and other critters can help control that. But it's when we're harming these wetlands that's when it becomes a problem.
Have we gotten better with that in Ohio?
I mean, we're getting better.
We're strong with wetlands up north here.
Yes.
How about in other parts of Ohio?
I would say probably eastern Ohio would probably be better. Problem of northwestern Ohio, since it's more agricultural.
Yeah, lots of runoff.
Yeah, a lot of runoff, and also, too, just, you know, a lot of the farmers will destroy it or what.
Yeah.
But, you know, northwestern Ohio was the largest swamp. It was the Great Black Swamp.
Yeah.
And they said that thing went, how long went it? About 20, 30 miles. That, I mean, it was a huge, huge wetland area.
Yeah, so it was a huge place for food for animals and breeding grounds for animals. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, have they done enough correction to make the lake, Lake Erie up in the northwest of Ohio?
Yeah.
Have they clean that up? They were getting terrific algae
blooms. I think they're getting a little bit better, but I know a few years ago it was very bare.
They wouldn't let me go in the water.
Yeah. And then I think I told you I was there and it was fine, but then a week later after my birthday, it was polluted. So I don't know. It seems like we go through good years and we go through bad years.
Well, what will an algae bloom do to you if you go into it?
So I think the blue-green algae, which is that part of the algal bloom, I think they can carry E. coli and other bacterial diseases.
Well, and you can definitely see it. When we were there, you could definitely see a change of the color. And it was, for some reason or other, close to shore. As we looked farther out, it didn't look like there was an algae bloom out there. Maybe they like less rough waters, or maybe the shallowness makes it easier for them to live. I don't know.
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was very disappointed when we went up there. And like I was telling you off the air, my wife and I are considering getting another motor home. We had a RV, but it was a trailer type, and we just didn't find that satisfactory. But we're thinking about getting a motorhome, which we can drive, a little tiny motorhome. We'd like to get a little 22, 23 footer that we can drive everywhere. But it's kind of disappointing when you get to a place like that and you can't go in the water. I mean, not that we do a lot of swimming, but
it's nice to dip your toes.
Yeah. And, but we have taken our trailer mainly down to Delaware Park, but we've gone other places. And they have other problems of pollution and stuff like that. And I don't understand. Well, and most of it, I think, has to do with agricultural runoffs.
Yes, yeah, from the runoffs, but from the farms.
And I think they're trying to correct that to some degree.
Oh, yeah.
What can they do?
You got EPA that comes in and regulates it. I mean, the EPA, I mean, are trying to work with the farmers. You know, they're trying to give them better agricultural practices. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they'll adopt it. Sometimes they won't. You know, sometimes the soil and water conservation districts have to come in and, you know, kind of tell farmers, you know, this is what kind of practice you should use so it doesn't create runoff.
But pouring chemicals on it is a lot easier than bringing in walking sticks and ladybugs to that type of correction.
Yes.
Yeah, and it probably doesn't do enough change that a guy that has 1,000 acres of soybean probably can't bring in enough critters.
Oh, no. You would need a lot.
To balance the nature,
Yeah.
And I feel for them. Because we do need the agriculture. We have to feed an awful lot of people, 330 million people?
Probably.
Plus the world. And so we do need to be able to figure out how to coexist.
Yes, absolutely.
And we're struggling with the coexistence stuff. I think, just talking when I was running for office and talking to some of the young farmers, they are finding ways that they can minimize the use of fertilizer and that type of stuff.
Yeah.
They've found that they don't need to kill it to death.
Yeah.
They just need to stop it and make it go to sleep. And that's what a lot of the younger, and we have terrific ag schools.
Oh yeah, we do.
When I lived in Indiana, Purdue was outstanding, and then there are smaller ag schools. You went to a school that really it wasn't ag, but it was natural.
Yeah, good old Hocking College.
They give a lot of good information. So if you're going to do that sort of thing, and I've followed a lot of blogs that talk to extension agents and stuff like that so that I can have a totally natural garden. I don't use any fertilizer on my garden.
Oh, that's good.
All we use, and we do find a way to get the good critters there, not the bad ones. You still get the bad ones.
Oh, yeah. That's always hard to control.
Yeah, the one I don't want to have is the horned tomato worm.
Oh, yeah.
I want to keep him out.
Yeah.
They're ugly.
You need chickens.
Yeah, but you can't have chickens in the city of Ohio.
That's right.
Or of Athens, yeah. I've talked about it. My wife and I, my daughter, has chickens down in North Carolina, and they allow it there. They up to five in the city, and they have five chickens, and they don't have any problems with critters.
Oh yeah, chickens really clean it up.
Oh, they do, and they go crazy after a good rain. They'll come out and they'll peck the ground for hours and hours and hours.
Oh yeah,
but you have to be careful because the foxes like to eat chickens.
Oh yeah.
And they had
foxes, they raccoons, minks, weasels, all kinds of things.
Yeah, that's interesting. We've talked about minks before, and we don't have much time, but we do have minks in this area, don't we?
We do, especially around Big Island.
Really?
Yep, okay. Tall Grass Trail, I see them quite often.
Really?
Yeah.
And you haven't made any coats out of them?
No.
I assume that's probably against the law to trap mink, isn't it?
No, you can trap mink.
You can do that.
Yeah, it's a fur bear here in the state of Ohio.
Okay, cool. Well, we'll talk about more of this after we go to our break. We're about a minute away from our break, and we have as our guest, as we always do on the last Thursday of the month, James. I'm trying to bury that in my head. James Anderson. Several times I've thought he was coming in, and it was the fourth. So that's why I'm having a problem. It's my problem, nobody else's. And I was going to play Happy Birthday to Me this morning, but I'm going to pass on it. when you get my age, you tend not to even think of birthdays. But my wife said Happy Birthday to me this morning, and she said, "Where do you want to go eat?"
Oh,
so we're going to go out and have dinner tonight. Well, we're not going to go out. We're going to go out and get it and bring it home.
There you go.
All right. Well, we'll be back after a 15-minute break here. We're speaking with James Anderson, the naturalist for Marion County. I'm Glenn Coble, and you're listening to On the Air here on WWGH 107.1.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, The Talking Place. For legendary comedian Dick Gregory.
I just say my prayer to the real God. I said, "Hey man, there are some Negroes that deserve cancer, but I am not one of them." I said, "If you need some help, if you're tired, you need 12 black folks, maybe, I'll put them on a piece. If you need some close to the house, I'll give you that too." And then I looked at my body and I said, "Cancer, I ain't never bothered you, and I dare you to bother me. I'm going to give you 72 hours to get out of my body. And if you're not, I'm going to roll on you."
The legendary newsman and former host of the Today Show, Hugh Downs.
So with only 3 minutes left and 25 days, you have a big birthday coming up on Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
My goodness, I can't even believe 95. That's amazing.
Yeah, well, it is to me too, I guess. And you know something I can honestly say? Every decade of my life has been better than the preceding decade.
The legendary singer of the hit song Tossin' and Turnin', Bobby Lewis.
I couldn't sleep at all last night. Thinking of you.
To the exchange panel of Scott Spears, Sean Kraft, and Charlie Evers.
Oh, you gotta go to a shrink?
Yes.
How much do they shrink? What are they before
Charlie,
they shrink?
No, wait. You know, so you have mental anguish over this
yes,
now. So it's not only the physical, it's the mental anguish.
You guys are something else.
No, we are.
That's why we're here.
I'm deadly interested in this story.
If we weren't something else, we'd be walking the hallway.
Oh, Lord, it's physical.
But the thing.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, Marion's Talking Place. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 2842 Marion Waldo Road. Telephone number 740-225-4495. Webpage crtmechanicals.com.
Hey everybody, it's Pastor Steve Whitaker from the Pastor Spot. We are on every Tuesday at 5:15 and replay again on Wednesday at 3:15. We take pertinent issues of the day going on and look at them in a biblical perspective. So we'd love to have you listen and just, you know, call in, just get a conversation going and have a great time on the show.
Pastor Steve Whitaker is the pastor at Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio. Address 209 East Water Street. The Marion Towers Apartments are a supporter of WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Address 400 Delaware Avenue. Phone number 740-387-9050. Programs on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM are brought to you by Williams Grass Cutters. Telephone number 740-272-0062. Website WilliamsGrassCutters.com. Facebook page at Williams Grass Cutters. Email w.grasscutters@gmail.com.
GTG, BRB, OMW, be there in a few. You may think that these kinds of texts are fine because of their length, and you can easily send them at a stoplight. But no, answering one text can take your attention away from the road for 5 seconds. And traveling at 55 miles an hour, that's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Make good decisions. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopRex.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Adam Media and Adam the Computer Guy are a proud supporter of WWGH Radio, offering remote and on-site technical support, network setup, and computer troubleshooting for homes and businesses. Website pctech.biz or adamthecomputerguy.com. Telephone number 740-531-2326. Also available mobile notary services in Central and Mid-Ohio.
We here at WWGH Radio 107.1 FM are proud to present Magnificent Marian Moments. Marge Hazelett has led a life of service. She worked as a professor at The Ohio State University at Marian for over 50 years and served on many boards such as Junior Service Guild to help give back to the Marian community.
Hi, I'm Robin Leach with those champagne wishes, and you're listening to WWGH 107.1 FM, streaming live on the internet, www.wwgh107.1.com.
This is Scott Spears looking down on the beautiful city of Marion from the WWGH News Chopper. If you would like to ever submit a news tip or an event to the WWGH News Department, email Scott at WWGH1071.com and watch out for the chopper. And now a few words from Scott Spears, Charlie Evers, and the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams.
I've got my milk and my bowl and my saucer.
Sounds like you're getting ready for breakfast. What are you having?
Well, I'm having a bowl of golden grams with a side of toast with golden butter and a nice golden glass of apple juice.
I should have known. WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, the talking place.
Now with Scott Spears, Monday through Thursday, 12:10 p.m. to 2 p.m. right here on WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM. Guests like legendary civil rights icon and comedian Dick Gregory.
Today I shut everything down. My wife was laughing because if it wasn't from the show, y'all wouldn't hear from me. And that's why you have people listening to you that don't listen to other things. First, they want to hear you. There's something in your voice. When I got off the plane yesterday, my wife told me, she said, you know, your friend called in 1 or 2 days. And I said, we'll move Wednesday around. And we do it on Wednesday and tell them I do the day date on Thursday.
Well, Mr. Gregory, I thank you so much for that, because it is always a pleasure to have you on.
The king of all talk show hosts, Phil Donahue.
Well, you're very kind, and thank you, Scott. And I don't mean to look like I'm kissing a baby, but you are very good yourself. I will say this about you. You don't float a battleship of words around a rowboat of thought. And I'm afraid I do that once in a while. I do that usually when I'm least convicted or informed about my answer. The less I know, the more I talk. I think that's a lot of these are some of the things I learned over the years. The slow learner has learned after 5,000 television shows. But everybody should have the break that I had. A lot of breaks. And my hat's off to you. Thank you for your pursuit. I noticed that too. You reminded me of all the times that we worked very hard again and again to get guests that we wanted, including Ralph Nader and many others. So it's been a joy. I'm pleased to have been here. And I hope it'll cut.
I think it'll WWGH Radio, now with Scott Spears, Monday through Thursday, 12:10 to 2 p.m. Join us. Offbeat News and Trivia with Nate Redman can be heard every Wednesday here on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM from 4:10 to 5 p.m. Also streaming live on the internet at WWGH1071.com. Don't forget to listen.
Hello, neighbors. This is pastor and Bible teacher Craig Heilman, inviting you to join me this Sunday and every Sunday from 11:10 a.m. to 12 noon for Study His Word Radio. And that's exactly what we do. We'll take a few moments, open up God's Word, and study it. We'll also spend some time talking about current events that relate to the church. We'll have some interviews with local people of faith. We'll answer your Bible questions. And we'll take your comments about our study. So please, join me this Sunday, every Sunday, at 11:10 a.m., right here on WWGH 107.1.
It's time for summer fun!
Zambezi Bay!
Zambezi Bay is open and ready for you!
I'm ready for adventure!
Bring it on! And it's easy and safe to get tickets!
We're ready!
Reserve your entry time at ZambeziBay.com.
Bring it on!
For your safety, a pre-purchase ticket is required for all guests, including season pass holders and gold members.
Zambezi Bay!
It's time for WWGH News. News about people, places, and plans. Live from the WWGH Newsroom, I'm the man with a golden voice, Ted Williams.
This is Scott Spears in the WWGH News Center. The Marion Police Department is investigating a report of a missing juvenile who ran away from her father's home on Marion's west side on May the 12th. It is believed that missing juvenile Jaden Magg may be in the company of her mother, Sarah E. Hall Snyder. Snyder's last known residence was in Mansfield, but she has previously resided in Galleon, Ontario, and Marion. Sarah Snyder currently has an active warrant through the Ontario, Ohio Police Department for failing to appear on an original charge of shoplifting. If you have any information as to the whereabouts of the missing juvenile Jaden Magg or wanted person Sarah E. Hall Snyder, please contact your local agency or the Marion Police Department at 740-387-2525. Jaden Magg is 16 years old, 5'5" tall, weighs 220 pounds, hair brown, eyes blue. If you have any information, please contact your local agency or the Marion Police Department at 740-387-2525. The Ohio Department of Health and the Ohio Lottery would like to congratulate the winners of Ohio's first Vax-a-Million drawing. Abigail Bujinski from Silverton in Hamilton County won the first $1 million prize. Joseph Costello from Inglewood in Montgomery County won the first full-ride scholarship, including 4 years tuition, books, and room and board at an Ohio public university or college. The winners were selected in the drawing conducted by the Ohio Lottery and overseen by the Ohio Auditor of State on Monday, May 24th. We're excited that this has inspired so many Ohioans to get vaccinated, and we're thrilled to announce the winners of the first round of drawings, said Governor Mike DeWine. 2,758,470 Ohioans entered the drawing to win the $1 million prize, and 104,386 Ohioans, aged 12 to 17, entered the drawing for a college scholarship. The entry period for the next Ohio Vax-a-Million drawing ends May the 30th at 11:59 p.m. With more than 5.1 million Ohioans who have entered the vaccination process, not all who are eligible have entered. Ohio Vax-a-Million is an opt-in program, meaning you are not automatically entered. It takes less than 2 minutes to enter online at ohiovaxamillion.com. Those without internet access can also enter by phone at 1-833-4-ASK-ODH. That's 1-833-427-5634. Once you enter, your entry will be carried over through all the drawings. You do not need to submit your name each week. Learn more about COVID-19 vaccine at coronavirusohio.gov/vaccine or find an appointment near you at gettheshot.coronavirus.ohio.gov. Walk-in appointments are available at many providers statewide. To speak with a representative to answer questions or book an appointment by phone, call 1-833-4-ASK-ODH. That's 1-833-427-5634.
Live from the News Force Weather Center, here is your Weather Minute.
Thursday in the Mariner, we'll see partly cloudy skies during the day, a high near 76 degrees. Tonight, cloudy with rain developing after the midnight hour, a low near 56 degrees. For your Friday, rain and possibly a thunderstorm, a high near 62. Saturday, cloudy with an occasional rain shower, a high near 56. And Sunday, intervals of clouds and sunshine, a high near 66. Local pollen count is high to medium high through Saturday, with top pollens being tree and grass. Get the latest conditions and more on our NewsForce 24/7 mobile app, available now in the Google Play and Apple App Store. For the NewsForce Weather Team, I am Zach Fuller on Marion's Talking Place, WWGH 107.1 FM in Marion, and online at www.